Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It's Monday, March 4th. How the hell is already March? Here's what's driving the day. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley has won her first Republican presidential primary contest. Unfortunately for her, it's Washington, D.C., and unfortunately for her, it might be her last. Haley won D.C.'s very insider-heavy GOP primary and its 19 delegates, with 63% of the ballots cast over the weekend at a downtown hotel. That's about where the good news ends for Haley this weekend. Donald Trump swept contests in Michigan, Idaho, and Missouri, and he's expected to run the table again at North Dakota's caucuses tonight. He's also on track to romp the vast majority of the 865 delegates at stake in tomorrow's Super Tuesday primaries, which are being held in 16 states and American Samoa. Also, another week, another looming government shutdown threat. That's right. You'll remember Congress narrowly averted a shutdown just last week by passing yet another short-term stopgap bill. Well, there is another deadline this Friday, but things look a little better for Congress after House and Senate negotiators released a $459 billion, with a B, dollar spending package last night, funding more than a dozen federal departments and independent agencies through September, right in time for, an election. The story is not over yet. However, this bill represents only about 30% of discretionary federal spending, and lawmakers have until March 22nd to hash out the rest, including funding for the Pentagon, health programs, and much, much more. And then, of course, they have to, pass the bill. As if there wasn't enough news this week between Super Tuesday and the spending deadline, it's also State of the Union week. President Joe Biden this weekend in Camp David huddled with his closest aides to kind of work on that final State of the Union of his first term. The stakes are really high, not just for kind of the laundry list of policy goals that the president wants to talk about, but also to counter the narrative that he is too old for the job. He can do that with a really good performance on Thursday night. The White House is going on the communications offensive this week and after as well. After the State of the Union, President Biden is going on some trips to Philly and Atlanta. The vice president is going to Arizona and Nevada. And they are also sending their secretaries out on the road. Secretary Granholm, Becerra, Vilsack, Yellen, Cardona, Holland, McDonough. They are going to be on the road talking about the different things that the president is going to speak about in his speech on Thursday. Another person that is part of that media blitz is Department of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. And our colleague, national political correspondent Adam Wren, talked to the secretary about a litany of things. And he's here now to discuss that with me now. Good morning, Adam.
Good to be with you, Eugene.
So you interviewed Secretary slash Mayor Pete Buttigieg over the weekend. One, you've been covering him for a really long time. But I found most interesting about this is we're right in front of the State of the Union. This is a man who has been one of the most prolific and maybe best messengers for the administration. And they clearly want him to be out there as we head into the State of the Union address.
Yeah, Eugene, I think that's right. And what's also interesting here is that Buttigieg is a young face. And Buttigieg is one of these faces who can put a younger sheen on the administration at a time when Biden really needs it, when voters think that he is too old to do the job, but he's now running for a second term. And so I think that there are some optics at play in putting someone like him forward to message what has been one of the biggest accomplishments of the Biden administration, which is the once-in-a-generation infrastructure law that is splashing money right now across swing districts and swing states across the country.
So one of the things in the interview that was really interesting is that the secretary kind of concedes something that not a lot of high level Democrats in the Biden administration will concede, but that a lot of the aides have. And that is that the messaging they've done has not worked. Right. You bring up this morning consult Bloomberg poll that shows voters trusting Donald Trump over Joe Biden to handle infrastructure 43% to 37% despite this huge law. So I guess Tell me what Buttigieg said, but also kind of like how you kind of, as someone who really knows him, read between the lines for me a little bit.
Yeah, what I find interesting about him and his response to this particular question, and really other questions, you know, going back to the midterms, you know, I interviewed him when he was doing a midterm campaign swing in Michigan in the fall of 2022. And at that time, you know, he was calling it a cost of living election at a time when a lot of other administration officials weren't saying that. They were talking about democracy, abortion. And then if you look at this interview, you know, he's saying that, yeah, like this is a season for storytelling and we have to tell the story of this historic bipartisan infrastructure law. And though he didn't use these words, you know, clearly he's saying that not every state or every governor is giving Biden credit for the infrastructure law. And I thought it was interesting. They are promoting this digital series about the impact that the infrastructure law is having on real people. And they started with a bridge that it's connecting Wisconsin, which is a crucial swing state, to Minnesota. And they're doing it in a district where someone like Republican Representative Pete Stauber is one of these people who they say, in their words, took the dough after saying no to the infrastructure law. And so they're highlighting areas where they're trying to show that they own this law, this popular law that voters clearly aren't giving the administration credit for.
Yeah. And last question before I let you go. You know, Pete is young. He obviously is going to be running for president again or something at some point in his life. But you asked him about basically how much longer are you going to do this gig if President Biden were to win re-election? What did he tell you?
Yeah, you know, I asked him if he was going to break Norman Mineta's record of 5 years. Mineta served under George W. Bush from 2001 to 2006. And so if Joe Biden wins a second term, you know, would he be there longer than a year into that administration? And, you know, interestingly, he told me that he has no plans to break any records, which is a subtle shift from what he was saying a few years ago when he said, you know, he would say, I serve at the pleasure of the president. You know, I'll be here as long as he needs me. Clearly, there's been a subtle shift here, and he is starting to consider what a post-DOT role might look like, whether that's somewhere else in the administration of a second-term Biden presidency or whether that's somewhere else entirely.
I was going to say, I wonder if that shift has anything to do with the year 2028. I don't know. Who knows?
Random date on the calendar, yeah.
Who knows? Adam Wrenn, thank you very much, sir, for coming on.
Great to be with you.
And for your schedule today, the House and the Senate are out. Also, Vice President Kamala Harris will be meeting with Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz at the White House today. And this comes after her public comments about a, quote, human catastrophe in the Middle East. In a speech in Selma, Alabama, the vice president also called for a 6-week temporary ceasefire, which is the deal that's on the table. Basically calling for Hamas to take that deal so aid can get in and hostages can get out. She's expected to continue to reiterate that message and others to Gantz, especially one that civilian casualties have to be reduced. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.